Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, September 1st, 2011. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. With this week, Michael Tonsmeyer, the Mad Fermentationist, and Nathan Zender join Andy Sparks and me as we sample homebrew saison and talk about the history of this type of beer and how to brew one yourself. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james, and our show page on Facebook is at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us and click on our associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you this show, and we greatly appreciate your support. And there is now an amazon.co.uk link on there as well. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. And you can listen to us on your Basic Brewing iPhone and Android podcast app on the respective stores there. And we're on the BlackBerry podcast directory now, too. This is yet another episode when we talked so long that I want to jump right into the interview. I'm planning an email catch-up show to make up for it, so keep those virtual cards and letters coming, and I'll continue to answer them through the email on the computer, and then we'll talk about them at a later date. Usually, we get beers from Mike Tonsmeyer and Nathan Zender to sample and talk about, but thanks to help from Andy Sparks, this week we got to return the favor and send some homebrew saison their direction. Well, Michael Tonsmeyer and Nathan Zender, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks, James.
Yeah, thank you.
And Andy Sparks, welcome to the studio.
Oh, it's great to be here. I'm really excited about this one.
Andy of thehomebrewery.com. Got to get your plug in there.
Well, thanks, James. Appreciate that, as always.
Andy, as you've heard many times on the show, Andy got me my start in homebrewing. So, you know, if you like what we do here on the podcast, you can thank Andy. So, but we're not here just to inflate Andy's ego. We're here to talk about saisons. And Mike, you and Nathan wrote an article in the July-August issue of Brew Your Own magazine on the new or the cult of the American saison. But before we go and talk about how Americans have sort of taken their twist on the style, if we can use that word, why don't we talk about some of the history? What is a saison? Where did it come from?
I think Belgium is the obvious answer. Saison is a traditional farmhouse beer. And I think as Peter Boucart, as Belgian brewers in general would say, style is not a word that Belgians use with any sort of frequency. And saison, I think, is probably chief among those. There are saisons that are 4% alcohol. There are saisons that are 9 or 10% alcohol. They can be light beers. They can be dark beers with or without spices, sour, hoppy, bitter, any of that can be in a saison.
Yeah, I think, like Mike was saying, like it started with the Walloons, the French-speaking Belgians, and then those northern French that are up by the border. That whole area was just sort of like, you know, been conquered and moved. The borders were just all over the place. But it's just sort of the Walloons, I guess, are the great saison brewers. They're field beers, rustic beers that generally were brewed in the winter. And then provisionally held to the summer, you know, to quenching beers for field laborers. Back then, when they were brewed, like you know, a couple hundred years ago, this is when people were drinking beer all the time, 3% beers, two or 3% beers, 5-6 liters a day. So you can imagine these beers. I guess the early saisons were probably like 3% alcohol or less. And then when it coming to that was pre-industrial brewing. After sort of like industrial brewing came in, you know, the later 1800s, that's when you actually had sort of brands and maybe it moved off the farms a little bit. And then the alcohol rose up to, you know, 4, 5, 6%, maybe some special winter ones that were a bit larger.
And then really it's been only recently in the last 20 or 30 years that Saison has really become the Saison DuPont sort of thing, where it's 6.5% alcohol, bigger, these specialty beers that they could export, that they could sell for a premium. Saison traditionally, because being a farmhouse ale, often had other grains, oats, wheat, rye, things like that. Anything that they spelt is a great example. Anything that they had on the farm, unmalted grains, maybe spices that they were importing. Really, it was the sort of beer that they could just brew with whatever they had on hand.
And the reason I think they were brewed in the winter months is because these are farmers first and foremost. So they were busy during harvest season, planting season. So in the cooler months is when they actually had a chance to brew. Also, there was the beers would last longer if they were brewed in the winter, because there'd be less chance of, I mean, all these beers, you know, would have taken on some kind of, most likely would take, they were aged in wood cask, or they would have taken on usually some kind of lactic inoculation, Brettanomyces, lactobacillus, things like that, you know. So that was some way of this whole idea of like beer to guard, which, you know, is the beer for storage, you know.
And at this point, we should also mention Phil Markowski's Farmhouse Ales, which was published, 7 or 8 years ago now. Terrific book. I mean, if Saisons and Beer de Garde are something that you're interested in, and this is one of those books that...
It's the Bible.
Yeah, and an inspirational Bible in the sense that it says, here are your options, here's what you can do, here's what you should try. It's not necessarily, you know, fully up to date now. There are a lot more yeast strains available. There's a lot, you know... But just that feeling and that sense you get from the book.
For straight inspiration, if you read Ivan DeBate's section on the history of Saison, it'll light up your imagination, and you'll want to go out there and spend your whole summer brewing these complex, wonderful, elusive beers. Get yourself a copy if you don't have it, obviously.
And if you want liquid inspiration, Ivan runs De La Seine Brewery, with Terrace Bulba and a couple of other really sort of terrific, weird Belgian beers that sort of stray off the, even, you know, if you can say Belgian Saisons have a medium point, he's about as far away as you can get on some of these hoppy, you know, 4% kind of Saisons and other weird stuff that he's trying out. He also works with Cantillon on a soured wit that was released as the Zwanza, I think, 2010.
Yeah.
Which we got to try, which was terrific.
I reread that section today of Farmhouse Ales, and it was very inspirational, and it reminded me that, I mean, this was a beer that in the beginning it was a higher alcohol beer, even though it was only probably 4 or 5%. It was higher than they were used to drinking, because it was meant to be stored for a longer period of time. It probably did get a bit more sour than they were used to, or the other beers that they drank fresh.
I think that DeBate says that these historical saisons had a small wild side. So they have, yeah, like, and I love that, like, the language of the books. He also says that it's important for a historical saison to have extraordinary character. So it's like, again, he's like really getting your mind going, like, how, what does that mean? And like, how can I recreate that? A small wild side, you know, it's brilliant stuff.
So how have Americans taken that, even though the definition of style in any Belgian beer is elusive, and they rebel against that, as you said about Peter Boucard. How have Americans approached that style of beer, and how do American brewers interpret it?
I mean, I think Saison has come to be defined by the yeast. I think sort of the definition most homebrewers use is, if it's brewed with Saison yeast, it's a Saison.
Yeah, I mean, it's not defined by color, alcohol content, grist, really, you know?
I mean, normally, sort of in a broad category, very dry beers. If a beer is, say, over maybe 10-10, I wouldn't call it a Saison.
Yeah, so generally, very attenuated, dry beers.
I mean, many of them are down in the low, you know, 1.002, 1.003, that sort of range. But from there, I think Americans have gone the higher gravity range. You don't see many American Saisons under 5 or 6% alcohol. Most of the examples are in the 6, 7, 8% range, more in line with the Belgian specialty ales, the Saison DuPont or the where are some of the other big sort of Belgian Pipiac.
Yeah,
and a lot of that sort of that bigger range.
And another great one that we should mention is over the border in France is Thierry's.
Yeah,
which are
the XX Extra.
Yeah, they're doing these wonderfully dry, relatively low alcohol saisons. They're really worth seeking out when you can find a bottle. Yeah, I can find them in every shelf in America, but when you do, you should definitely grab one.
Particularly
of
if they're fresh.
Yeah.
They do the XX Extra is a hoppier saison. And so, again, the fresher the better with something like that. But really, saisons are now all over America. I mean, there's Phil Markowski, the author of Farmhouse Ales, is the head brewer at Southampton Public House in New York. There's
there's whole breweries that are using saison as lifeblood. Yeah. So Stillwater out of Maryland, is all his beers are different variations on the idea of saison. The only thing that defines them and keeps them together is the yeast. So some of them are dark, some of them are spiced, some of them are hoppy. The alcohol level's all over the place. But they're all done with this very extraordinary yeast strain, you know, which is usually going to be DuPont or the Thierry's strain,
which is 3711 French saison from Wyeast, which is a fantastic strain.
Yeah, one of strain, and then there's like Upright up in Portland,
Funkworks in Colorado.
Yeah, all these people do. That's all they do is there's a short lived company earlier last year called Odonata, who were contract brewing out in Sacramento. They were just doing saisons.
One saison, Pretty Things up in Boston. We love Dan Paquette.
Their flagship beer is an American saison. So it's just something you're seeing more and more of. In sort of preparation for this article, we had contacted Ryan Michaels up at McKenzie Brewhouse, who's an extraordinary brewer who.
Just north of Philadelphia, they have what, three brew pubs?
Yeah, like three brew pubs just north of Philly. And amazingly enough, he in saison, this category JBF that's sort of be all over the place. He's gotten the gold medal three of the last 4 years, and he's
with
done
three different beers.
Yeah, the beer has the same name, Saison Vautour, which is a rye saison. But the three different versions where he did a clean stainless steel.
Just his first one. They always have now. It's become one of their house beers. This clean fermented beer. Really simple. They use Saison 2 from White Labs, rye, pale malt, a little bit of sugar, no spices, moderate hopping, nothing weird. Second year, it was that beer, but accidentally Brett infected. They, I believe, realized it had a little funk to it in the bottles. They've since stopped bottling anything that doesn't have funk, just so they don't accidentally.
They've just given themselves completely over the bottling line. The small bottling line is all for mixed fermentation.
And then the third year, now all the Saison Vautour they do is barrel aged in these wine barrels that just have this house culture. It felt like being in one of our basements. The way they transfer bugs from one barrel to the other, the way they inoculate barrels, is they have a sample thief. They pull samples, they take it, they taste it, and they take the – don't clean the sample thief, put in the next barrel, take a sample. And so it's sort of this,
extraordinary beers too. Mm-hmm. These are gold. These beers won JBF gold 3 or 4 years.
In a category that probably has 50 or 60 entries every year, the odds of that are just so.
Yeah, and so that's small. The wonderful thing about saison is 1 year was clean, 1 year was funky, 1 year it was sour and funky. Mm-hmm. It can be all over the place. It just has this extraordinary character.
Mm-hmm. And that's one thing we should mention here too is that the JBF commercial brewing in general. They give the brewers a little bit more range. Mm. When you're talking about BJCP judges, often a lot of judges are looking for a Saison DuPont clone. So if you want to win medals with a Saison, probably shouldn't be funky, probably shouldn't have Brett, probably shouldn't go way up or down the alcohol or way up on the color. But with the pros, I think they give them a little more leeway. They assume that they have a little bit more fun with their beers, and they're brewing for commercial purposes.
Well, fellas, I'm getting thirsty. So Andy has a couple of his beers here that I would love to dig into. And I'll probably pause the recording here while we get the cork out And if you guys want to run and get the, we'll start with the caged and cork one first. How about that?
Okay, yeah, cool.
Yeah. I haven't tasted mine, but it sure looks pretty and it sure smells good.
Yeah, ours is brilliantly clear. How's yours?
It's so cloudy.
Yeah, it's a little.
Yeah, the glasses are all sweaty looking. Yeah.
This was the corked one, right?
Yeah.
The non-oatmeal cookie one.
Yeah, the glasses just have a bunch of condensation on them, so that's why they don't look as clear to you guys, I'm sure.
Cheers, guys.
I think you also just drove over with the beer. Mine's been sitting basically next to the fridge for a couple of months.
But you know what's funny? Going back to the Farmhouse Ales book, and when I was talking to Debates about the article and doing some digging up some history, he was saying one of his big complaints with American Saison was that as far as recreating it, you know, if you wanted to call it, you know, a traditional Saison, is that traditionally they were very low carbonation beers. Hmm. Nowadays, you always think of these Saisons as highly carbonated. Yeah. But back then, they sat for a year, and these weren't like scientific brew house. They didn't do yeast counts. They didn't repitch yeast, all kinds of stuff. They would just bottle it up. So they're actually almost flat beers. Hmm. And now everyone thinks of them as one of the most Sprite and carbonated styles you can do. But he's like, no, no, no. In fact, traditional Saison was relatively flat. Hmm. So,
well, Andy, tell us about this beer. This is wonderful. This is I love it. I don't know about you guys, but I think this is wonderful.
Thank you, James. It's a fairly simple beer. I use the ale yeast blend from White Labs. Like I was telling you guys earlier, it's a fairly, basic, grist. It's Pilsner and, Vienna malt predominantly, with a little bit of, oats and a little bit of acidulated malt to, try to brighten it up, give it a little acidity. And when I fermented, I started it at 68, and each day I kind of kicked the temperature up on the cabinet a couple degrees, so that by the end of the week it was about 78 in that range, and kind of left it for a couple weeks. I wanted to try and get it good and dry, and that was something that I had read, that the blend was, because I guess the other yeast in the blend tends to like warmer temperatures. It was maybe a good idea to run that one up a little bit. So, and it seemed to have a very nice perfumey character when it was fresher. And the one that was not breaded seemed to retain more of the kind of the yeast perfume kind of that I expect from a Saison. Now this one, what I did is I split that into two batches, kegged part of it, and then I reserved just a couple gallons. Pitched it in the bottling bucket with the dregs of a couple Orval bottles, which is a pretty classic way for homebrewers to get Brett and a beer, and then caged and corked them in Belgian bottles, and this is about a year old now. So,
it's a very light funk. I mean, it's really balanced. When I bread a beer, it tends to end up really sort of funky barnyard, and this is, I think, more that classic Belgian level where it's this complexity and this. I mean, I get a little apple, a little bit of pepper, a little of that horse blanket, mm-hmm. sort of, leathery, whatever. But in balance with the rest of the beer.
And these, I mean, like, Saison should not be an easy drinking beer. There should be, it should be bitter. You could have some funk in there, some muskiness, things like that. Like, you're not looking for this wonderfully clean, drinkable beer. I mean, people think of them as summer beers. They're called Saison, French for season. Generally that season would be summer, which would be été. But it's one of these things that, like, you as much character as you can get into the beer as possible, like, it's ramping up fermentation temperatures. So, we spoke to a lot of these brewers, American brewers, that are doing their interpretation of the style. I think what they really hit on was when you're formulating a recipe, mashing temps incredibly low, dangerously low for a lot of home brewers, as low as 143 degrees Fahrenheit for conversion. Single infusion at 143, 145 degrees.
And if you're going to go that low, a lot of people talk about, sort of 60-minute mash being the standard. I'd go 90 minutes. I'd go even longer than that. I mean, you may even want to consider, if you've got a lot of oats or a lot of, raw grain there, do an iodine conversion test. Because not only do you want this converted, but you want it really converted. You want it so converted that it's going to dry out easily. Particularly because some of these strains can be a little finicky. As Andy was saying, the White Labs puts out this blend. A lot of that's because the DuPont strain, which is sort of the classic, either white, white yeast or white labs carry it just as Saison.
And from the farmhouse books, the farmhouse book says that it's actually a mutant of a red wine strain.
One theory says.
Right, one theory says, which are happiest at like blood temperature. So this is a yeast that a lot of people, we talked to brewers that pushed this yeast well into the 90s. 90s approaching 100 degrees of blood temperatures.
And not only that, but you think at that sort of temperature, sure, it's going to ferment out in a week. It still takes three weeks or something like that. Which is why a lot of brewers blend it, either the white labs blend or some breweries add the 3711 French Saison yeast, because that's a much more resilient yeast. It'll ferment cooler. 3711 will ferment pretty much anything down to about 1.004.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, almost no matter, even if you ferment in the 60s, it won't be as spicy or as interesting, but it will still get the job done.
Yeah, so that DuPont strain can be real. I mean, some people say, the brewer that is able to contain that strain, is working with magic or whatever, because it's so difficult to work with, and that's why they put out, these blends of DuPont and something else, because really, if it's not something that you're in tune with and you know how to handle, it can be so difficult. Frustrating to work with.
We talked to Bob from somewhere down in Florida, another quarter of the country brewing Saisons. He started with that strain, and he had trouble for a while. After repitching it, he says it'll ferment water now. It's just the most attenuous thing. It'll ferment water almost.
That's great.
As soon as you add the yeast, the fermentation is done.
One great thing about Bob is that he's it's a sort of a one-man shop. He's only doing Saison, so we left him off that short list earlier. But down in Florida, and he
does forage beers.
Yeah,
he
exactly. So the idea of Saison is this product of the farm. Mm-hmm. So he uses things like saw palmetto fruit, and so he goes out there and finds whatever local spices, mm-hmm. and that's something we should actually talk about, spicing. Yeah. So he just finds what's available there in Florida, and that's agricultural, and that's what he puts in his beers. And then taking on this house character, where it's
a little funky. I mean,
he
pitched bread at some point in the past.
Yeah, that's another great thing about Saison brewing is it's one of these things you could dedicate your life to and take on this house character, and you just have something that mutates and, it sort of adapts to your brewing environment, really. But that's really an important thing to have as a Saison. If you're a strictly Saison brewery, you should have a house character. Like all your beers should have that weird mutated muskiness
The classic example of this is Fantôme in Belgium.
Yep.
It's just all of his beers. I mean, now it's getting much harder to find his beers. And when you do, it's $16, $17, $18 for $7.50. And about 50% of the time, they're not particularly good. They're weird. They're off. There's something wrong. But the other 50% out there, they're transcendent. They are these magnificent, funky, like iron and minerally and weird, but delicious.
Yeah, and completely elusive and ghostly, as the name would sort of. But James, can we talk about spicing? Maybe
I was reading in the book, and Ivan said that. That spices are more for complexity and not for, jumping out onto the front of the stage and calling attention to themselves, but just basically to be a part of the sort of backbone of the beer.
I think that's one of the classic sort of Belgian ideas, is that if you could identify the spice, you've added too much. You want to add spices at a level where people might say, oh, is that... there's a spice in there, but I can't quite tell. Maybe is it pepper? Is it grains of paradise? Oh, maybe it's nothing at all. And I think that's one of the keys, is adding it at these very sort of restrained levels, a couple of grams even. And sort of the classic ones, black pepper, white pepper, grains of paradise, ginger, these sort of spicy spices that give you a little bit of boost to that yeast character. I mean, you can also, There are then some weird beers like Southampton's Cuvée de Flore, which is loads of flowers in there, dog rose and chamomile.
Which is a beer to seek out. Listener, that I love that beer, but it's weird.
That beer, I used to love Cuvée de Flores maybe 4 or 5 years ago when it was still being brewed at Southampton. And they switched when they're now contract brewed by, I believe, Sly Fox in the 750s. And they went from using actual roses to rose water. And to me, the rose water now dominates the character. It is too strong. But that's one of those things you can argue about. Maybe I'm just a little really sensitive to rose water because I've been, you know, using novelty soaps that are in the shape of shells.
We can talk about how people, like, there's hot side, there's cold side. You can put it into the boil. Obviously, if you put it in the front of the boil, it's going to have a different effect than you put it at the end of the boil. You can do cold extractions. You can do
either an alcohol or teams. Hot water.
Yeah.
My personal take, I love using cold side, either a tea extraction or an alcohol tincture or just direct steeping. When I want to really taste the spices, if I wanted to, say, do a holiday ale or a pumpkin ale, something like that, where you really want to go, oh, wow, holiday spice, or oh, wow, you know, cinnamon. But for something like a Saison, I like adding them in the last, say, 5, 10, 15 minutes of the boil. I think it blows off some of the more volatile flavors and aromatics of the spices. And it really gives you just sort of a more integrated character, something that you're going to be a little less sure on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great for what, like an experiment. Yeah. Obviously, you run it off into 5 environments. You do different treatments. So it's really right for that kind of experimentation, you know. It's really great for just personalizing and just saying, this is my house beer. This is, a something that represents something.
One of the classic things you can do, I know Destruce does this, is that you can come up with a custom spice blend, something that you add at a very low level to a lot of your beers to give them that house character, rather than having, say, a house yeast or a house culture. Something that's very hard to maintain if you don't want to brew Saison 7 or 8 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
Just come up with, your signature blend and add that, at a low level, below threshold, where you're not going to pick out those spices. Things like coriander, things like cinnamon, things like thyme, these sort of weird spices or herbs that you might want to taste a little of, but you don't want necessarily a thyme-flavored beer.
Mm-hmm.
And also, one thing I think that'd be interesting to talk about, too, is Saisons, so many people in the homebrew environment, either through lack of space or resources, don't have dedicated sort of fermentation chambers, refrigerated fermentation chambers. So summer brewing can be really tough for a lot of homebrewers, right? So that's really where Saison shine, right? So it's here in D.C., it's 90 degrees, it's 100 degrees, it's rippingly hot and humid for most of the summer, right? So if you don't have a fermentation chamber where you can control dialing temperatures to exact degrees, it's really gives you something to do during the summer, right? So you can I think it's a great style to have in your seasonal repertoire. It's like, if you're brewing with the seasons, summer should be all about doing Saisons.
Which is kind of ironic because in the beginning it was the Saisons were just brewed in the wintertime. So it's a flip-flop.
Yeah, and it's one of these things that, like, so many people just have to, like, not brew. Like, a lot of brewers just
take the summer off.
You take the summer off just because they can't do anything else. But this is your time where you can do, experiment with these hot fermentations, things that you read that you're not supposed to do. But you know what? It can work. And it can be magic. Sometimes not so much, but, it's...
One of the things to mention here, hot temperatures are fine. I mean, even, say, an ambient temperature of 90 is fine. What you want to avoid is temperatures that really fluctuate. You don't want 70 degrees at night and 90 degrees during the day. A little fluctuation is all right because you've got 5 gallons. That's a lot of thermal mass. Even if you're fluctuating, 5 or 10 degrees, probably the temperature of the actual beer itself isn't going to change nearly that much. But you don't want going up and down because if you drop too low, the Saison yeast is not going to be happy. It's going to start flocculating out. It's going to think winter's coming or whatever. And it's not going to wake back up again in the morning when the temperature starts to rise. You can try a water bath. You can put it in a big water bath. Even if you don't add ice, it'll just add more thermal mass. It'll keep the temperature more constant throughout a 24-hour cycle of sun and no sun.
Yeah, I guess you could also surround it with a blanket or a sleeping bag or something like that.
Exactly. Well. Particularly if it's a little bit on the cooler side and you want to keep that temperature generated by the fermentation in. And so that, I think that'd be a great idea, particularly in the early fall or the late spring when it's getting warmer. Maybe it's 80 degrees, wherever you're fermenting, but you want to boost it up a little more.
But seasonal takes on the style are great too. You know, it's great in the summer, but then I know Mike has a tradition of doing these sort of like these winter saisons too. That are fun.
A couple of friends and I for the last 3 years, and we're getting ready for our fourth year, have done a dark saison with some sort of dried fruit. So we've done raisins, we've done dates, we've done figs, some sort of spicing, orange peel, rosemary, black cardamom, which is, we use 3 grams of black cardamom in 15 gallons. It's borderline too much. Wow. It's black cardamom, I'm not sure how many people have used it. It's sometimes used in West African cooking and Indian cooking. It has this sort of tobacco turpentine sort of flavor. And it's not genetically related to the regular white or green cardamom. They're so popular in Scandinavian cooking, but it's just this weird, funky spice. Again, something really weird that you can use in a very small amount. And we often, the first year we add ball dregs and bread and whatnot to about 3 gallons. And we like that 3 gallons so much that since then we've just done the entire batch. Hmm. Funky.
And it really just makes sense because saison means season. Yeah. So just make a season your own. I mean, like put pumpkin into it and whatever else and call it a autumnal beer or springtime.
Flowers.
Dandelions. Some people have done these dandelion saisons. You know, you just go out, spend your day picking flowers and you throw it in the next day into your kettle, you know.
Making sure that they aren't dandelions that have been sprayed with pesticides.
Very important to note that.
Or aren't in the backyard with the dogs.
Andy, do you want to try this second beer?
Sure, let's do that.
Is it the cookie one?
Yeah, this has got the so it's basically the exact same recipe as the other one, but the homebrew club that meets at my store, we do a little iron brewer thing. We completely ripped that off from something I saw on James' show. But one month it was oatmeal cookies. Iced oatmeal cookies was the idea for the weird ingredient that you had to brew with. And I was making the saison again. And so I thought, what the heck? I'll just take the oats out of the original recipe, throw in a bag of iced oatmeal cookies and see how it changes, you know. But it's basically, this was pitched with the dregs from the last beer we had. But
I like the way this one smells.
Yeah, it does have a lot of oatmeal cookie to it.
So instead of using the Orval dregs, you used dregs from the previous...
From the previous saison with Brett we just had. Basically, I just emptied one of the bottles, or we drank part of it and then emptied the bottle into the bottom of the bottling bucket. And I think one of the things that I've tried to do, at least in these... to kind of subdue the Brett character, is that I wait until the beer is really thoroughly dry and done. And then when I prime it, I primed it with basically table sugar. I didn't want to add anything that might add additional fuel to the Brett. And I also added additional USO5 to this when I bottled it. So the USO5 would pretty much eat most of the stuff, leaving the Brett with kind of a limited supply of food. So the idea is that the beer should change less over time and have maybe not quite as a powerful Brett effect.
That's very nice. I think it doesn't have, this one is maybe a little less bready than the first one, or maybe it's just because I've been drinking.
I was going to say the opposite.
Yeah, really?
This is okay. Straight like Brett beer. The esters are like dead on Brett.
Beautiful.
To me. Yeah. And this tastes like, I know there's Brett in this beer, and I really like it. But it's got that sort of like, you know, that some people hit Brett for being that plasticky kind of ester. I think you've got that in spades here. It's really, really good. You never know there's cookies in this either.
Of course, my taste.
And maybe could be talked into a little bit of cookie, but not in the flavor.
Of course, my taste buds have been discredited before recently on the show, so I've got some, you know, I've got a lot of credibility to build back up.
It's also tough when you're drinking two different beers. You guys sent me these beers, what, maybe 3 or 4 months ago?
Yeah, it's been a while.
They've been in my cooled down basement room with the AC on to 65 degrees. So it's hard to say, you know, if you've got something else going, because ours again is crystal clear,
and these are as well. These look clear.
You all probably have access to that, a lot of Boulevard beers. Mm-hmm. And so you get the Saison Brett.
Yeah, I brought one of those tonight.
Yeah, so that's actually in this sort of category where it's a very bready Saison, which can be a wonderful thing, really.
Their tank stuff is great, too. It's always great to see a brewery that I think was now over 100,000 barrels a year doing these sort of weird, eccentric beers in the middle of America where you, 10 years ago, someone would have told you you were crazy to be a brewery that big, you know, making a living doing weird stuff like that.
And right. I think the ultimate badge of honor is Stephen Powell's there brewed a collaboration beer with Orval. How can you trump that? I mean, like, if you have do a collaboration, I mean, the collaboration here, obviously, the flavor of the moment, every brewery in America has probably done a collaboration at this point. But to brew a collaboration beer with Orval.
Who only brews, one and a half beers normally if you want to call Petit Orval is watered down Orval for metal, I understand.
That's pretty incredible. That's really the ultimate badge there, isn't it? So,
well, he's Belgian.
I know he's sort of had an in on that, but.
Yeah, we a couple years ago, or it might have been 3 years ago by now, we a bunch of the Flops Homebrew Club, the Fayetteville Lovers of Pure Suds, and I went up to tour the facility, and we interviewed Stephen, and they have the luxury of having, like New Belgium, you know, they have the luxury of having two breweries now. They've got their brand new brewery that they can, you know, brew all the wheat beer all day long that they want, and then they have
that wheat beer is probably 89,000 barrels.
and then they can have the little brewery to play around with and do the smokestack series, which I'm truly grateful for. They've been doing some wonderful things up there.
Well, they haven't hit our area yet, unfortunately. I know
we get to try them at Savor.
They just made to Massachusetts.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they just announced that in the last week. But
I didn't say that. I was just up there, yeah.
Well, we will fix you up. We will fix you up.
Mike was saying that the Tank 7 is just amazing.
Mm, nice and hoppy.
I mean, you call a hoppy saison. Yeah. Sort of.
And then I believe it's the same base beer they use for the bread saison. Maybe not as much hop or more hops in the Tank 7.
But what wonderful beer is really.
That beer can be truly sublime, and we can get it on draft around here. So.
Mm. We'll have to come to visit, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Well, come on.
First interview next time.
Come on down. So if you were starting out, if you were a brewer who's never played much with Belgians or Saisons, and you wanted to do something fairly straightforward but indicative of the style, design us a beer on the fly here. What's your beginner's basic Saison?
And the classic would be, I mean, Saison DuPont, as far as I'm aware, is 100% Pilsner malt. So either if you're all grain, you can do 100% Pilsner malt. If you're extract, 100% Pilsner malt extract. You do 35, 30, 40 IBUs of something European or something, you know, based on European. So either your Zaz, your Hallertau, or your Styrian, or your Crystal, or...
Just for one second, just jumping in and saying that, you know, when you have a beer that's excessively dry... like saisons tend to be, those you got to watch your IBUs because 35 can taste exaggerated because there's no body left in the beer. So that's something you want to be careful doing a 90 IBU like saison. Oh, yeah. It'll probably rip your tongue to pieces.
And that's something that a lot of West Coast IPA brewers have found that if you dry out the beer, you really point of the elder or something finishes at 10-12. That's not where IPAs used to finish. IPAs used to finish, a couple points higher. They found out that if you dry them out a little, particularly if you're adding sugar or something like that, that you really have to be, a little more reserved. You can go lower than that. Or, if you want to get crazy, you can go higher than 44. It's about as high as I would go for anything you'd call Sterne Saison.
And there will be Saison IPAs.
There are.
Yeah, they're out now, and it will be something that you will see. It's probably the next big style.
So if you're, let's get back to the beginners. So we're doing 100% Pilsner malt, so you probably want to do a 90-minute boil.
Exactly.
So what's our starting gravity?
So one of the things, again, like the IBUs, since you're getting such an attenuative fermentation, you're going to get more alcohol than you expect. So even if you want, say, a 6% beer, you might want to start at 1050. Even I made what I call the petite saison at about 1045, and with 95% attenuation, it's about 5.5% alcohol, really not a petite beer at all. So I would start on the low end. If you want a bigger beer, even if you want a really strong saison, 1060, 1065, you go much higher than that, you're going to be pushing 10% alcohol. So, I mean, keep the gravity and the IBUs on the moderate side. Make sure, just like any other beer, you want to pitch enough yeast. You know, you don't want to stress the yeast out too much, particularly if you're pushing the fermentation hot. You can get fusel alcohols, you can get all these other things. A little bit's okay, adds complexity, but you want to be pitching healthy, active yeast. As Andy said, start fermentation on the cool side. Start in the high 60s, the low 70s, and then let it ramp up into the 80s or 90s if you want. Pitching too hot again, fusel alcohols, those sorts of things. I'd ignore the spices to start. Maybe a small addition of hops near the end of the boil, you know, a half ounce in the last 5 or 10 minutes if you want. Again, you certainly could go higher, but you don't need to. Let ferment out. You cold condition if you want after fermentation's done. Make sure it's 100% done. The gravity's been constant for a week or whatever. Make sure it's dry. Make sure it's below, you know. I'd start with Y-Yeast 3711 French Saison. I mean, that's the most reliable, easiest to deal with strain. You can try Saison DuPont. You'll have to be willing to get it hot. You'll have to be willing to wait for it. You may have to be willing to add another yeast to finish it out.
Maybe use the blend, the 566.
Or the blend.
Yeah.
What we should also mention that we haven't talked about is if anyone is in the Northeast, particularly New Jersey, and or is willing to mail order, Al Buck has started this company called East Coast Yeast that does weird, eccentric strains. He does a Saison Brasserie that's a blend of a couple strains. He has a funky Saison blend called Farmhouse Saison that includes a Brett strain he cultured from Fantôme. He does a bunch of other weird stuff too. Fantastic stuff. Princeton Homebrew carries it. You can mail order it when it's cool. They don't ship in the summer.
This man has a full-time job.
He
propagates yeast on the side. It's like nights and weekends. So it's very artisanal. It's very hands on. He's somebody to support.
Yeah, and he used to send this stuff out for free to people with the promise that if they got this, you know, the Berliner blend or the Flanders Red blend, that in a year and a half, 2 years later, they would send him a bottle or two of beer as a thank you. So he's a man who isn't in it for the money. He is in it for the fact that he loves great sour beer, funky beer, weird beer. I mean, he's brought back to life some strains that have been off the market for a while. He is culturing and personally propagating strains from, you know, Rodenbach and from some of these breweries. Really fun stuff and really worth getting your hands on.
We've used his bugs and some of our mixed ferments, and we can only say the kindest things.
Yeah. We at the moment have two barrels in my basement, approximately 5 feet below where we're sitting now. One with his Bug Farm 3, one with Bug Farm 4. That each of these things, he individual cultures 15 or 20 different strains. And not just, you know, like, sure, that includes bugs from Russian River and Dreyfontainen and every Jolly Pumpkin, who knows who. But then it's also kombucha bugs, which I know James knows about, sourdough bugs. I mean, pretty much anywhere he can get a lactobacillus, a PDO, a Brett, an acetobacter, a saccharomyces, he is finding these things and blending them into these weird,
and going back to, and tying that into Saison, is really the yeast is the soul of this beer.
Yeah.
And it's neat to see there's another very famous yeast bank. So White Labs was started by Dave Logsdon, right? So Dave, in the last year or two, has now opened up his own little artisanal brewery doing strictly farmhouse beers, doing wild fermentations, growing his own cherry trees out in the Hood Valley. So it's really neat to see how this yeast can really, there's a whole cult behind it. It's a religion, and it's this wonderful primal thing. And that is the life of the Saison beer, you know.
Now Dave,
it's got a strange attractor.
Dave Logsdon is Y-Yeast. I think you
said
White Labs. I just wanted to, I get them mixed up too.
So let me go back and do the whole thing over again.
No. But what I want to say or want to ask is, you know, Andy and I have done some harvesting from bottle dregs and built up, you know, with starters. If you have, say, a Saison DuPont, can you harvest the dregs from that? Or what Saisons are out there that we could play with?
Certainly. I mean, pretty much every Saison I'm aware of is bottle conditioned. I mean, I can't think of a pasteurized forced carbonated version. Saison DuPont, again, going back to farmhouse ales, there's some debate over whether they have a single strain or whether it's this multicultural, three or four different strain kind of culture they use. And it's one of the sort of theories behind why their strain is such a pain in the ass to deal with, is that maybe if you've got three or four of these different Saison yeast, that maybe the one that has been selected by Y Yeast or White Labs and streaked out and, you know, purified is one of the strains, but not maybe the most attenuative strain or the most active strain. Maybe it's just sort of the strain that gives the best character. But pretty much anyone, I mean, if it's a clean Saison, you can certainly, you know, start culturing it in a small amount of wort and build it up and then pitch it. Something like Fantôme, I might be more inclined because Lactobacillus is going to outcompete the Saccharomyces. I mean, more convinced to pitch a blend or pitch a clean strain from one of the yeast labs and then add the dregs just directly to the fermenter, build them up a little, maybe get, you know, make sure they're viable and pitch them in, just to add that rustic, funky character that that Saison, if you love it, has.
But then again, I mean, even if you do build up the dregs from your favorite Saison and you brew a Saison of your own and it comes out different because the yeast blend acts differently in that environment, you've still got a Saison potentially, and then you've got your own house Saison.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then if you want to keep repitching it, I mean, that's one of those things that gets into a level that neither of us have gotten into, of really trying to keep a house culture and keep propagating, because if you don't pitch it quickly enough, the lactic acid bacteria will take over.
Mm. So yeah, propagation. Yeah, if you that'd be a neat thing to take on as a side project, is just keeping a propagation tank going. If you really are into this sort of house yeast culture, if that's important to you, taking that on as a real important project. But it needs to be fed. It needs to be put to bed every night. You know, it's really taking on a big responsibility. You know.
And again, you don't have to do the same beer over and over again. You can keep brewing different weird variations, strong beers, weak beers. You know, you don't have to just brew the same, you know, 100% Pilsner Saison once a month. You can mix it up with various other versions.
Well, one thing I'd like to, you know, we talked about the simple recipe for basic homebrewers. One thing we didn't mention, and maybe it's a good idea, is that if you're doing this with an extract base, if you're trying to do this extract, probably ought to swap out maybe a pound of your extract with some corn sugar or some table sugar. Dry that thing out, because extracts tend to be way thick and heavy. And I've found that, throwing an extra pound of sugar in there, we'll dry it up a little bit and make the beer a little more crisp. That might be said.
Yeah, I don't think it'd be unorthodox to see 10, 15, 20% sugar, blonde sugars, and not only homebrew, but professional IPA. Professional Saisons, excuse me. It's just something like you're saying, that these simple sugars that just, you know, they're going to get you this super dry beer. That should be your end game for Saison. You know, it should be a wonderfully dry beer, dry beer.
Yeah. For example, when we helped out at Mackenzie's Brewhouse, we ended up brewing a beer called Irma, and it's a variant Irma Extra that was barrel-aged. And that had, I think, 15 or 20% at least sugar in it.
A lot of sugar.
Maybe even more of that.
Yeah.
And part of that, we were a little bit under gravity, and so we went with a couple of bags of the soft candy sugar from Dark Candy. And then some of the barrels got honey, and
don't be afraid of sugar. I mean, it's sugar, it's food, you know, it's carbohydrates.
One thing I should mention, when we talk about percent of sugar, we're not talking about percent by volume or by weight. We're talking by extract. Mm-hmm. So if you're brewing a 1060 beer, then we're talking, you know, if you want to talk 25%, then that's what 15 points, gravity points from the sugar, and the rest. Because sugar, you're getting 100% extract on, it's going right in the boil, and you're not, and it's also like 45 points per gallon per pound versus, you know, grain. It doesn't take nearly that much by weight to get up to that amount as a percentage of the fermentables.
That's a good point. Now, as an effort to redeem myself, as this beer has warmed, I'm getting a lot more Brett character out of the beer.
Yeah,
so
it definitely comes out more as the beer warms up. A little more of the horse blanket thing going.
So in a desperate attempt to reclaim some of my credibility as a taster, You know, we should have done comparative thermometer reading.
It's actually really, really smelling pretty good right now.
Yeah, both of those beers are very, very nice. Mm. Well, guys, this has been a lot of fun, and I enjoyed sharing beers going that way rather than just, you know, hoarding your beers, your wonderful beers that you send this way. So thanks to Andy for being so generous and sending beers up there and for being such a great brewer.
Well, thank you, James. I think I sent these up there when we did the Berliner Weiss episode. I sent these up there when you guys sent the Berliner Weisses down here. So it's been a while.
Well, there you go.
Well, I hung on to them.
Yeah, they age wonderfully.
Yeah, beautiful beers.
Well, awesome. I look forward to talking to you next time, guys.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks so much.
Well, thanks again to Michael Tonsmeyer, Nathan Zender, and Andy Sparks. Great article with more details in the July-August issue of Brew Your Own magazine. If you want to get a free issue of BYO, click on the banner on our website. And if you like that issue and decide to subscribe, you'll be helping to support this show. And we greatly appreciate your support. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time on our site. And you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in our online store as well. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Bob's Red Mill Organic Scottish Oatmeal, 20-ounce bags, pack of four, and Futurama action figure Talking Bender. And across the pond, or from across the pond, one of our first Amazon.co.uk entries, The Wind That Shakes the Barley. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo or Amazon.co.uk logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by our buddy Kelly Dodson down in Austin, Texas. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.